Hello, everyone. I'm Alex, and I'm here with my husband, Shane, and we are so glad that you could join us for Happy Hour on this Family Tree Podcast, episode 198.
Two away from 200.
It is going to align now with the way our schedule's been. We were saying 200's going to be on the birthday, and we're going to turn into a party. Look at that.
On the birthday? So what, we're recording it on March 20th?
Maybe. Well, birthday week. But remember, we were saying we wanted to turn episode 200 into a bit of a party?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Alex is turning the big 3-5. What?
I think it's
a big birthday.
It's not bad. I think by fives is a good way to kind of do that. But it has been, you know, we've taken a couple weeks off. We've been getting a lot of time in as a family. And we have had a big life-changing thing happen. And I'm going to let Shane introduce that.
Yeah, kind of a death-changing, I guess we could say.
Sorry.
Alex, why is that funny? So my mom had stage 4 cancer, and she entered a hospice, and she has now passed, which is very surreal to say. But the hospice experience was scary for me to enter, because it just, you know, what that means is death is going to happen imminently. Like, your days are numbered. And she had a palliative care score of 30%, which means it could pretty much happen within, it's very likely to happen within 5 to 10 days from my research. And, you know, some people can go longer than that, but those are the odds. So I kind of knew that going in. And I was prepared for the death, but what I wasn't prepared for was how kind the people at the hospice were going to be. I thought they were specially trained to be these super kind people, but apparently that's not true. They just, I guess the type of person to work at a hospice is just a super kind, caring person. Like, when my mom died, they cried. And these people are around death all the time. So that, I was taken aback by that. I was moved by that. The comfort level they were able to provide, the food that they had was great. The location, what was this place called?
It's called Margaret's Place. It backs onto a conservatory kind of in Dundas. And every morning, like, there would be deers running outside of his mom's room. Like, she'd be able to see the deers, like foxes. It was.
Alex, are you pluralizing deers?
Deers. Sorry.
You're a school teacher. Those deers are beautiful out there.
No, but it was really incredible. And even bringing up the kids, like, they had a play area. They had a ton of kitchens that you can go and make coffee in. And then I'd go out back with the kids, and we would see like 5 deer. At a time. And it was honestly incredible. And what I've come to know, because a lot of people that had been messaging me when I said, oh, your mom's in hospice, you know, the hospice workers or people with, you know, that had experience, I don't think they're all made the same. And I think Margaret's Place is just a very special spot. And it's like, they don't have that many beds. You know what I mean?
10 beds they have, yes.
So very few people get to experience that level of care for end of life. And it's like, it kind of opened my eyes. I'm like, man, I want that level of care. But what if there's 10 other people already in there? You know what I mean?
Well, they're in and out pretty quick.
Yes.
I think there's conflicting reports here if you Google it, but I think the average stay in a hospice is 8 days. Sometimes I Google it, it would say over 30, but... You know, I feel like 8 is somebody's in and out of there pretty quick at a hospice. So although there's only 10 beds, I think you wouldn't have to wait too long. Maybe you don't have a lot of time to wait either. Yeah. So that's on the flip side of that. So maybe you have to go somewhere else. But yeah, they definitely have a workplace culture. Somebody took the lead early on and said, we're going to be the nicest place in the world, the most caring place, the most nurturing, and on the ball place. And the deer, sir, it's a really great touch, because people like when somebody dies, you like to see a bunch of deer running out and being like, that's Trish. That's a sign. She's one of those deer, you know? And there's lots of opportunity to have those coincidences and, you know, interpret them in your own way, which is important.
It was nice to see her so comfortable in that last week. So she was in the hospice for like 6.5 days, basically, 7 days. And it was so nice to see the comfort, because they were on everything.
Well, the day before she died was the day she looked the best. And I think because mm-hmm. when you're uncomfortable, you can see it in your face and your body, and you're kind of, your range of motion isn't mm-hmm. the way, you know, I remember my mom moving freely when she could. But the last day, her face looked normal. She was moving around way more like how she was when she was healthier. And it's because she was jacked up on so much drugs, you kind of forget about your range of motion, or mm-hmm. you forget that you can't breathe, because, you know, lung cancer is like torture, the way you feel like you always can't breathe. And there's so much anxiety and claustrophobia within your own body that these drugs just relieve you of that. So yeah. it was a little bit, even though, you know, you're in a hospice, she has the cancer, you know, death is imminent. You're still shocked mm-hmm. when it does happen, because right before is when she's almost at her most comfortable.
Yeah.
And I was listening to a podcast with Steph Tolliv, who's one of our favorite comedians. She interviewed a hospice nurse. And there's this death rattle that happens right before you die, where the breathing becomes very belabored and it makes a rattle. And you'd think, oh, that person mm-hmm. must be going through excruciating pain. But the hospice worker in this interview said there's no pain in that death rattle. As wild as it sounds or uncomfortable, there is no pain. It's mm-hmm. a very comfortable death in a hospice. So that is a relief to know.
I was looking that up too, because so the PPS scores that Shane was talking about, that's the palliative performance scale or score.
Yes, that's it. You got that right.
And it's I think it was developed by a hospital in BC. So looking into that, when we first found out your mom was eligible for hospice, like when she was at 40% or whatever, I started looking that up immediately. Then I told you, and then you were researching it, and it felt comforting to know just like what to expect at each stage. So basically, when you're totally healthy, you're 100. When you're dead, then you're 0. So you go down. And it was comforting to know like what signs to look out for, like what to expect, because things like the death rattle are so normal, and they basically happen to everybody in like the last days. I mean, again, mm-hmm. we didn't experience that with your mom, but it was so helpful to know that kind of thing. And I loved being informed in that regard. It just reminded me of like other times where we liked being informed, like you mentioned this morning, knowing the, you know, gender of your baby, or like when we were looking up all the odds of if our kids were going to have a trisomy or something because they were at risk. Mm-hmm. And just being on top of things. That was like, when she passed, it was still a shock, but it was a shock that we expected. And I think there was comfort there.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I'm still in shock now. You know, mm-hmm. I thought I would be crying more. You know, my friend Bert, who was in his 80s, he died recently. And I did a podcast on another podcast, not this one, called The Best Hang. And I went to talk about him. I bawled my eyes out the whole time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this was just a friend of mine, a very close friend, but in his 80s, kind of that's the death decade where it's a little bit more accepting to die. And my mom, I'm able to talk about it without bursting into a crazy amount of tears. And I do think I'm still in shock. And I also, you know, I'm trying to do what my mom did when she had the cancer, which was distract herself with life's little anxieties. Mm-hmm. And that's, see, now I'm crying, but no, but that's something my mom and I both shared, my sister too. And, you know, even my dad to some extent, even though he's not related to my mom through blood, but we're just plagued by anxiety. And there's so many disadvantages to that. But the one main advantage that my mom showed me is how you can distract yourself mm-hmm. when something, a huge catastrophe in life, which, you know, cancer is one of the worst things you can have. My mom was, the day she died, she was paying her bills.
I was going to say that. She was worried about her husband dusting mm-hmm. the house properly.
Dusting the house. My mom was also worried about becoming a drug addict. She didn't want to get addicted to the drugs they were pumping in herself. She still had this fear of it, this irrational fear. You know, I find myself, as much as I'm mourning, I'm also thinking about, oh, the house is a mess, and all these little things that maybe, air quote, a normal person might not be fixated on, or might seem inappropriate to me thinking about, is really helping me cope.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I loved that energy your mom actually had, because there was, especially in that last week, like at the hospice, when she talked about like Brad cleaning or bills or something, like she was so annoyed by it that it was like so humorous, and she would even see the humor in it. And it was like, that is what kind of, when I think of your mom, I think of those things. And then I think of like going for dinner at their house and things, and how boisterous and fun it always mm-hmm. was. like just boisterous and loud. And I love,
so silly.
Yeah. And I like those kinds of environments because I feel like it's easier to relax. It's more accepting. It just feels more mm-hmm. homey. And I loved that about going to your mom's house. And like, just even thinking about, you know, after like Christmas dinner or something, sitting on that couch downstairs, just like so full, coziest couch in the world, like the coziest couch, and just being like surrounded by all the chaos was so fun.
Yeah. Yeah. My mom was definitely the least pretentious person in the world. Oh yeah. Getting radiation or chemo. A lot of people, they're worried about, you know, the effects of chemo or how draining it is on you. My mom's biggest fear was getting the needle.
Right.
For the chemo. And she would fear that like nothing else, which I always found interesting. Like what my mom would worry about was always fascinating mm-hmm. and comforting. And even in my life growing up, if I had a big problem, and there were some times, you know, I was in real jams, like massive jams. And I'd be like, I am fucked. And, you know, like one time I was in trouble with like the police. And the police came to my house and it was kind of serious and I was worried, you know, and my mom just was like so disarming with the police officer and made it seem like it was the least big thing in the world and comforted the officer, made it feel like, oh, well, the mom's not worried. This guy must be, you know, the good kid, mm-hmm. which I honestly was. And I was innocent. That's yeah, the thing too. So it was like this double whammy. But anyway, my mom did that with everything. Anything that I was really worrying about, she would be dismissive, which at times would be frustrating because mm-hmm. it's like, could we just acknowledge the serious thing? But it also made things feel lighter. Mm-hmm. And I could worry about something inconsequential. Like,
yeah.
You know, like you have to have a bath, you have to clean your room. You know, that was more important than like something really big. Anyway, the benefits of anxiety. I fear death less now
yeah.
in a way. Things feel less important. And
I will say the kids have been kind of helpful in that. Like they've, you know, everybody experiences things differently, especially if you're a kid who like they've known that grandma was going to die for the last 2 years mm-hmm. and their reactions to everything, they almost like it didn't make them too upset because they were like, well, we're gonna see her again. Like, we're gonna see her again when we go to heaven. Like, daddy will see her in heaven again. And it's just so and I was telling them, I was like, well, daddy's sad girl. It's like, that's his mommy. And he can't see her on earth. And they said, yeah, but he'll see her in heaven. She'll be waiting for him.
Well, Lucy, that's still like a 70-year wait if everything goes. But no one believes in heaven more than kids.
No.
You know, if you think you believe in heaven, talk to a 5-year-old. They really believe in heaven, if they're Christian and raised that way, of course. But just religion itself, like 5-year-olds are really, it's like Santa levels of belief.
But it was sweet because Lucy, in her own way, even Betty, I think, have been just trying to comfort you more, like mm-hmm. just going up to you and giving you, Lucy made you a card last night, like a really cute card.
And just random hugs in the middle of nothing. Like, I want a snack. I want a snack. Here's a hug. I love you, daddy. Give me my snack. You know, it's just.
No, it's funny. And it's a weird thing that happens. And you and I were kind of talking about this. And then, you know, a microcosm is like the kids in your own home. And then you can zoom out and it's like the world just going, turning. Everybody's still living their lives. The kids still are begging us for snacks and fighting and getting the house messy when this huge life-changing thing has happened. And you just, there's kind of no choice but to continue to roll with it.
Yeah. Like when you die, like generally you, anyone, even mm-hmm. if you're really famous, the world just keeps moving on and there's probably only a handful of people when you die who are going to carry it with them for the rest mm-hmm. of their lives. And usually it's the main witness to your life, your partner. Because when you die, Alex, your parents will probably be gone.
Yeah.
And maybe I'll be gone. I don't know. You have lupus. So I think if I'm a betting man, I would bet that you would die first. But let's not talk about that. But it's the kids, right? They're really going to be holding on to it for the rest of their lives. And when they're gone, it's like that movie Coco, right?
Coke. Oh my God, that movie makes me sob. I couldn't watch that right now just with the grandma and everything. I wouldn't be able to watch it, but I was thinking about that actually when we were talking to your sister, because I was like, nobody's gone unless you stop thinking about them. Mm-hmm. Then they're not truly gone. And that's a huge theme in Coco, because the one guy is about to be gone because the family refused to talk about him. So like even in the afterlife, he was about to be gone. Yeah. And I think it's so important to always like give space to think about people, to talk about people, and like to celebrate them forever for the rest of your life.
You know? If there is a heaven, I really want to know how it works. Like, how does it work? Is it like everybody's just there?
I don't know. That was like kind of like what it was in Coco. Everybody was just hanging out in this big party city, and they were going to parties and like events. Mm-hmm. And
but Coco aside, do you do you think you wear clothes in heaven if there is one? Are you naked? Man. What age are you in heaven?
Okay, in for some reason, like I don't picture a heaven where everybody's just like geriatric.
No,
you know what I mean.
Tell me what you pictured, not what you don't.
Maybe the age that you finally felt the most yourself, and maybe for somebody that is 80, where they were the most happiest.
So you do take a human form. You're not just like a sparkle.
Oh, a sparkle. I don't know. I'd like to be human form so that we can at least like live a little bit like we lived on Earth. Like we can hug and kiss and dance and stuff.
I wonder if there's stress in heaven.
No.
No stress. Yeah, no. That's good. And it's just forever. That's kind of scary too. It's like you die, you think you get some peace. It's like, I got to be here
but
forever.
It's only peace. It's like whatever you want all the time.
Yeah, but I'm not sure if you've ever done ecstasy before, but at some time you probably want to get off the ride. You're like, okay, can I get a different emotion other than pure bliss?
Well, then maybe it's like, is it Hinduism where you come back as another?
Oh, you come back and do it again without even knowing. Yeah. That's interesting. So my mom could be a deer, one of the deers.
One of the deers. Well, this thing, right? And you don't know. And then it's like the next life that you live is, it's like meritocracy based on the type of person you were in your last life. Meritocracy.
Meritocracy. So it's how good you've been is how good the animal you get to be?
Yes. So it's like if you were a terrible person, maybe you're going to come back as like a rat or like a worm.
But then they don't have a very long lifespan.
No, maybe you just keep coming back as worms.
So if you're a good worm, oh, you can't even be a good worm. You can't worm your way out of it.
I don't know how it works. But it's like maybe if you're like super good, you're like an eagle or a human born to like a wealthy family. I don't know. Like, I don't know how it works. I got to look into it.
Imagine heaven was just an orgasm for the whole time. Like
that made me spill my coffee. Yeah. That would be exhausting.
But speaking of which, I think we've exhausted this topic. Do you have anything else? Do we touch on anything else?
I don't know. I think we leave it at that. Mm-hmm. And okay. We will go to our question segment. And we'll just leave that beginning as a we love you, Trish.
Well, Mom, if you're listening to the opening of this podcast, I do love you.
They listen to podcasts in heaven.
They do?
Yeah, why not? It's everything. Your mom loves you and loves watching everything you do or listening. Yeah. So there you go. If heaven is that place and she's listening or watching us right now.
I feel like she's more of a Rogan fan though.
But she might just be watching us right now being like, don't shortchange me. So that's why I think we should leave the opening just as a Trish tribute.
My mom did love social media. She loved engaging. She loved listening. She listened to all of our podcasts.
Can I say what they're thinking of for the celebration of life, just because I think this is so your mom, and I think it's such a testament to
this. Was not my mom's idea.
No, though, but I think it's a testament to what she would like, because I do think she would love this.
Yeah, I like it too.
But Shane's sister and stepdad are thinking of getting an Elvis impersonator to come and sing songs at the celebration of life. And Trish was a huge, like, to the point where you walk in her house and she's got like framed pictures of Elvis in the house on the walls.
Well, she liked Elvis so much. She actually grossed herself out. So there was a point, she had Elvis stamps, everything. One day she's just like, I'm done with Elvis. She started throwing all this Elvis shit out. And I think at the end, because of the Elvis movie and Austin Butler's great performance and all that, I think it sucked her back in the Elvis world. Mm. So
did she ever see Priscilla?
Priscilla's too much of an art film.
I was going to say, but Jacob Elordi's better Elvis.
I liked him better. My mom would not.
Yeah.
My mom would like the almost annoying imitation that I think Austin Butler did, which I think was very impressive. But, I kind of want to kill Austin Butler every time I see him.
But there we go. Trish, Elvis loving, fun, unpretentious, awesome, warm woman.
Yes. Good little haiku to end it on. but yeah, let's get into the question segment. Now, this is where we receive questions from listeners. We answer them. Alex looks nervous for some reason.
No, no, I'm not nervous. I'm not nervous. I'm just, it's like, yeah, it's weird. It's how life goes. It's what we were saying, you know, one thing and then you just keep rolling.
Well, I'm sure all the questions are about death or.
I haven't said anything online about your mom, so they're not.
No, that's good. Okay. What's a question? Let's answer a question.
Parental preference. how each parent deals when a child will kick, scream, say hurtful things and prefer the other parent. And this is something that I thought is super relevant right now to us, because it used to be like, even this morning we were talking about how much easier it is to get the kids loaded in the car and go on places because Betty no longer has a strictly mama parental preference. Like she would only let me put her in the car, take her out, put on her clothes. But now she's like all about Shane to the point where sometimes I'll be sitting right beside her and she will not let me get her a snack. And if I try, she'll like start screaming and crying and tell me I'm the worst. So You speak on that a little bit because you dealt with it first and I kind of dealt with it after.
Well, yeah. First off, parental preference has nothing to do with you as a parent. It has everything to do with the child getting their independence and liking the fact that they have choice now. They're like, I get to choose which parent feeds me. So sometimes the parents could be like, what have I done? I've done something to deserve this level of praise or adoration, when the fact is you haven't done anything. That's not to say it doesn't feel good at times, especially if you're the, you know, the dad who's been told that you're basically a piece of shit for 3 years. And I find the booby milk does a lot too to hypnotize. So if you breastfeed your son or daughter, they're really, that attachment is strong, and that's hard to break because they're used to not only you being the one that they're, you know, physically around, you're also nourishing them and feeding them.
Food source, yeah.
So I guess three for us is when it happened, where she was able to break that spell of mama all the time to the point of annoyance where I couldn't even lift her out of the car. But yeah, I just tried to not get upset by it or not be hurt by it, even though it does hurt from time to time. And I was like, okay, I'll just help Lucy all the time. But now it's where Lucy's more gravitating towards you and Betty's more gravitating towards me, or at least it feels like more because it was like zero before.
And with the change, I remember like the first day it happened where I was like, oh honey, what can I get you for a snack? She's like, no, I want daddy. And I was like, oh, it was like a shot in the heart. I felt like I was stabbed in the heart. And then I had to remind myself, I'm like, oh no, this is what we've been wanting for the past 3 years. Like, this is what we've been trying to do. So take it, enjoy it. Remind her not to be an asshole when she says it. Like, she can say things nicely, but don't get offended by the bottom line, which is just that she's choosing independence. And it's one of the first things that they can like kind of control.
Yeah.
I will say it was cute when I came down this morning because Betty came downstairs. I like set her up with milk and some breakfast and TV and went back to sleep with you. And I came down again, like when I woke up, and Betty had put the chair, like the little kid's chair, up to the fridge, and she had the milk out and was pouring milk in her own bottle. And she actually
did. Spill it?
No.
Oh my God.
And then I gave her a high five. She like, you know how when she gets excited about herself, she like jumps around a little bit.
Wow, that's such a landmark, because that's so hard to do.
I know, I know. So I will say that, like, if you are a parent of young kids and you're stuck in the major parental preference phase where like you're doing everything, your kids can't do anything independently, we are in a new age of independence, and it's like awesome.
Yeah, Lucy likes making them both breakfast until that gets old. Once she proves she can do it, then it's back to, you know, you doing it.
Okay, and this is more of an announcement, but I'm excited to read it. After years of fertility struggles, we are finally pregnant. This is Little Miss Blondie.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow, this is like the biggest podcast supporter, the biggest, you know, supporter of this family tree. So that's massive.
I know.
Does she know the gender?
I'm not sure yet, but that's like, she can tell us for the next one, but that is so exciting. And we are so happy to hear that. That's like phenomenal.
No, when you started reading that, I'm like, well, we don't give a shit about some, like, she's probably like the only person that would actually care to hear that news. No, that's so amazing.
I know. Cause that is such, like, it affects every part of your life when you're going through fertility struggles. It just weighs on you no matter what you're doing. And that's something that's really hard to shake off. And to find, peace from that, from, you know, finally getting pregnant, that's incredible. Rainbow baby.
No, 100%. No, huge congrats.
And can you believe that in some states right now, they're trying to ban IVF?
Yeah, no, that's odd. I didn't know that.
It's the one senator, too, that's doing it. His own kids were IVF.
That's
and now he's banning it or trying to ban it, whatever. I don't
know. Yeah, politicians are all incentivized in weird ways and
psychotic.
Weird morally.
It's psychotic. Anyway, next thing, congratulations, big love. We are so excited for you. Next question. When I had my first, my milk supply wasn't great. Any advice on how to increase supply? So I want to say, before I even get into this, I hear so often it's like, oh, weaned early because of milk supply. Bad milk supply.
May I go to the washroom while you talk about
this? Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I'll be right back.
Poor milk supply. And I want to say, like, it's a widespread problem when we talk about it and when we see online, but it's actually not a thing that most women go through. So reality is that on a, you know, conservative estimate, only 5% of women actually have clinically low milk supply. And then a more generous estimate, 15% have clinically low milk supply. That's not a lot, yet you hear about it way more. Like, the majority of my friends talked about low milk supply. And in my own experience, I actually thought that I was dealing with this as well. In reality, I never was, but I remember speaking to one of my girlfriends. She had had three kids by the time I had my one. So she had more experience. She's really in tune with her body. She's very smart and just like a person who knows a lot about this stuff. But I remember at one point, it was like maybe the 4-month mark, where my breasts stopped being so engorged and went back to their, like, you know, little B cups. And I was like, oh my God, my milk's gone. Like, what's happening? And then when they would engorge, it would be barely anything. And I'm like, I need to stop. And you guys know, like, I breastfed both kids till about 2 years. But she was calming me down. She's like, Alex, that's not, that doesn't have anything to do with your milk supply. That's just your body knowing how much milk to give at each session. But going from those big engorged boobs where you have like way too much milk to that seems like such a stark change. And it makes women freak out and think that we actually don't have any milk when we do. We're producing exactly the amount that our kids need.
Well, if you ask me, your boobs are still gorge.
Thank you.
Sorry, I came in late.
But it is, it. So keep that in mind. And maybe you are somebody with low milk supply, or maybe you're like me and thought you did, but you actually didn't. And it was just your body knowing what to do. But number one thing, hydration, drink so much water. Like, Shane's the best water drinker on the planet. I need to keep up with you.
If you drink milk, do you produce more milk?
Well, there's a lot of water in milk, so probably.
There you have it.
And yeah, trust your body. Healthy diet. You can take supplements. You can drink like certain teas. There are like lactation cookies that you can buy. Everything. I used to like eating oatmeal at breakfast, and I found that helped with supply. At least the internet said it did. But yeah, just eat healthfully. Drink a lot of water and trust your body.
I have nipples. Can you milk me? What movie?
Well, it's from Meet the Fockers.
No.
Meet the Parents.
Yes.
But then also your TV show.
Yes.
I've got nipples, Greg. Can you milk me?
Where did Alex go? This is Robert De Niro.
Was that good?
Yep.
All right, good. Do you do good De Niro?
No.
I can't fish it out of you?
I got nipples? No, I see. I can't do it.
And our last question, what do you guys love about your relationship? What is one thing?
Wait, we only have three questions?
No, 1, 2, 3, 4.
We had 4?
Yeah.
This is a 30-minute podcast? Okay, we can stretch this out for a half an hour. Let's just talk crazy right now.
What do you love about your relationship? What is one thing you love? I saw the question, so I was thinking about this.
What is it?
I just like how fun everything can be. Hard times, stressful times, chaotic times. It's fun. And like, that's the baseline.
Mm-hmm.
And I do well with that kind of thing.
You do well with fun? I'm a good person to handle fun.
Shane, when it comes to fun, I am a good person to handle fun.
Well,
some people don't handle fun well.
I'm trying to think of a person who doesn't handle fun
well. Some people are put in a fun situation. They're like a wet blanket.
Oh, okay.
I'm a big fun blanket.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
You're fun.
Thank you. But it's like last night, you know, before you had to go for a work meeting, we were playing Donkey Kong after we got the kids in bed.
Well, the game did a lot of heavy lifting there. It's a fun game.
But I'm just saying we're always doing little fun things. If it's like 30 minutes of a video game before, you know, we have to do something else. If it is making videos together, if it is keeping the kids occupied on the weekend and doing fun stuff, like you're always down for fun things. I was going to say down to clown, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I am down to clown. You're down to clown. And that, I think, is the best thing about the relationship for us. That was the question, right? What's the best thing about our relationship?
What is one thing you love about your relationship?
Oh, yeah, just the inability to not get sick of each other.
No.
So that's what I like. And I know a lot of other people like, you know, absence making the heart grow fonder. So sometimes they'll be watching their sports while maybe their wife or partner is reading a book. And that relationship works swimmingly. And that's just the rhythms that those people like. For me, I like being with a person that I can be around 24/7. We go to bed together. We wake up at the same time. We watch same shows on TV. We play the same video games. If you're reading a book, I'm reading a book. That's just the type of guy I am. And that's the type of gal I think. I was almost called you Lucy, but that's that's the kind of gal Alex is. And to me, to find that person, it's special because, you know, you can bicker a lot when you're with that. So you got to minimize the type of person who's going to be bickering all the time. Like we were bickering right before we recorded this podcast. So it's going to happen. But overall, I think we don't argue that much, especially recently. And we're just like-minded people. We're down to clown.
Down to clown. I think that's the basis. But it's like, even if we are doing different things, I'd much rather be doing it in the same room. Like if we had separate things to do, like on our phone, or if you wanted to watch something and I want to read, like I'd much rather do it like sitting beside you, like my whole body, like on top of you while you're doing it. You know what I mean?
Like when I go working on a TV show, I bring Alex with me and I have her with me every single second of working on that TV show because she's my comfort person. So without her there, I don't function as well.
And I'm a good worker.
Yeah. Well, there was one scene. I had this, not even a monologue, but it was, for some reason, my brain couldn't wrap my head around how to say this line about steak. It was like, shouldn't you be putting garlic salt on that AAA dry-aged peppercorn steak? It was something like
one. Grass-fed New York strip line.
So I always miss like grass-fed or New York. And I'm like, Alex, I need you with the script there. If I miss one word, I need you there for me. She's like, yep. So, and Alex is just, she's off camera, but in a way that only I can see her. Even the camera people couldn't see her, but I could see her there. And she's kind of mouthing along when I'm getting it. And then I kind of blank out. And I look to Alex, and she's looking at her phone.
Okay.
She's, and then I go, Alex. And she goes, oh, wait, I know where you are. And you know, it's like when your parents pretend they're not sleeping while they're watching like a movie.
Opening the pages, trying to find where he is in the script.
And that really,
I was turning my phone off.
That threw me off.
I was getting a call from like work, so I was turning my phone off.
And you're watching Lucy and Karate. You're doing a bunch of stuff.
I know.
But I'm just saying, don't do that anymore. Because that was an important scene. And now every time I watch that scene, I'm just thinking of how we had to cut around that line.
Okay, I will say too, now that we're on this topic, so this is for Shane's special coming out, St. Bulge's Day, and it's like a spinoff of one of the skits from his comedy show, The Dessert. It comes out on March 17th. It comes out on St. Patrick's Day. It's a St. Patrick's Day episode. I watched a cut of it, like an edit of it last week, and I laughed from beginning to end. I kid you not. Like, it is one of the funniest episodes of TV I've ever seen. Well, and I'm not saying this because I'm not saying this because you're my husband. Yeah. Well, if you like silly stuff.
Yes, it is a comedy, but there is emotional moments too. And it is a story, I would like to think, that at the heart of it, by the end of it, I would like to think you're like, this was so stupid, but I want to see another episode. That was the goal. Mm-hmm. By the end, we want you to say, I want to know what happens next. Because ultimately, we want this to be a 6 to 8 episode series.
It'd be amazing. And I highly recommend. So it's on Crave if you're from Canada. If you're not from Canada, like Little Miss Blondie, when you're pregnant, just hanging out in bed, you know, can't walk. We're going to try to get this to you so you can watch it somehow. But Shane's, obviously, he stars in it. I make a cameo at the end. The kids make a cameo. My dad makes a cameo.
Yeah.
It's good.
There's some fun cameos.
It's so good. Can you mention the story about the picture, the running joke? Just because that is a very Trish centered joke? It has to do with your mom?
Not the first time. That's just an exaggeration for story purposes. But let's say the first time Alex met my mom, we were all sitting around. It was around Christmas time. And I think we had like a drink or two and we're just sitting there. My mom's telling stories about her youth. And she goes, I had this best friend or something. She's talking about some friend who she really loved. And my mom's getting emotional about how much she loved her friend. And she goes, you want to see a picture of her? And we're like, oh, okay. Yeah, why not? So my mom goes in the other room, fiddles around in her junk drawer and comes out with this photo and shows it to us. And it's like a 16-year-old girl in a coffin.
Just dead.
So obviously this is shocking to see. And we're looking at this just for the first time, processing everything in real time. And Alex and I look at each other and we start breaking, like, and we start laughing. Just obviously someone dying is not comical, but this situation is. And then my mom's kind of offended. But then my mom realizes this is kind of ludicrous. So my mom starts laughing. And then we really had a great laugh over this morbidly funny situation. So then when we did the Bulges show, anytime we talk about somebody who's passed or we show a photo of someone, they're in a coffin in it because it's just hilarious exposition. Instead of my mom telling us that her friend died, she wanted to show in the coffin like, she died without saying it, you know.
So. Also, it's funny to like when you remember somebody, the picture that you carry to remember them is them dead in the coffin. Right. Well, it's funny.
If you think about it, in the show, normally there'd be a like, you'd have to have an exposition through dialogue saying like, he died 3 years ago. But now we just show him in the coffin. It says everything you need to know.
Oh,
this man is no longer here and he's nostalgic about it. So it saves you a couple of steps.
Well, it saved your mom from answering follow-up questions about what her friend is doing now and things like that.
And the owner of Bulges in this series has died. But the manager, her name's Tatiana, her character's name, she doesn't need to say that. She's like, when my dad started this 30 years ago, just pan over, it's a man in a coffin. You know he's dead.
Oh, I love that so much. And again, that is a situation that reminds me of your mom so much. Because that's like one of the first like crazy good laughs I had with her. Like that was a hilarious time that will always stick out of my memory.
Yeah. So when you watch it, you know, you might not laugh at that particular gag, but there's meaning behind it. And it's cool that my mom got to affect history in some small way.
Yeah. No, it's awesome. But what do you think, Shane?
I think that's good. Yeah. Good way to end it. We got to almost 40 minutes. That's not bad. You know.
We got lots of stuff coming at you guys on our next one. We've got some exciting things coming up, but I do think it's nice to just kind of talk about Trish and the way she impacted you, the TV show. Everything.
Yeah. So give us a 5-star rating for sympathy reasons. Because people don't really rate podcasts anymore, I've noticed. But
no,
you should rate this Family Tree podcast. But thank you so much for listening to
this Family Tree podcast, episode 198.
Bye.